again, everyone. Welcome to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. My name is Brian Dinovelis. Happy Easter, everyone. Happy Passover. Happy spring. I think we're still waiting for spring to arrive here in New Jersey. It's coming around. Things are starting to bloom. The rain has subsided, and we finally had a couple of nice days. So hopefully that we'll see more of those than what we've seen lately. But yeah, spring is here. And how about portal combat? How about happy portal season? For some, yes. Others, not so much. If you're UConn, sure. This offseason has been an A. And I'll tell you what, it would be an A plus if a certain person by the name of Alex Caravan returns for one last run with his Huskies. That is the last piece of the puzzle. And you know, if you've listened to me or followed me on Twitter, I've said all along, I think Alex Caravan will return. Sure, he's testing the NBA waters, and I don't see anywhere where he's a first-round pick. And if that's the case, you know, you're dealing with a two-way contract, $650,000. In this day and age, you know, what is Alex Caravan's worth in NIL? $2 million? Certainly 1.5. I would put him in the $2 million category, depending on what your treasure chest is. And if that's the case, that is a heck of a lot more than $650,000 last I checked. So I think when it's all said and done, I'm not saying when, but I think he will return and the Huskies will be in prime position to be a top 10, if not top 5 team in the preseason in men's college basketball next year. We'll see. Well, if you're Rutgers or Seton Hall, you're stuck. You're stuck playing the waiting game. Why? Because it's a trickle-down effect. And that's why we're seeing some commitments coming in, but they're slow. And hey, it's only April. Let's see where we're at in another month, because really May and into June, by June 1st, you know, let's not forget, it was, and this was a couple of years ago, right? When players were leaving Rutgers. So after Memorial Day, right? Remember that? So this is a long process, and the tortoise and the hare, you have to be the tortoise in this situation, because otherwise, you know, you're looking at things and trying to get to the finish line in April when you don't have to. Okay, so patience. But we'll get to all the portal news on this episode of the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast in a little bit. I'll give my thoughts and assessment on what our teams have done so far, what they plan to do. How about St. John's? Where do they stand with Xavier Lee? It looks like it's Florida or the Johnnies at this point for the services of the former Princeton point guard. I'll let you know how I think about that. But first, I'd like to welcome in a couple of special guests. Our good friend, Freddie Hill, who of course is the former head coach of Rutgers and former assistant coach at RU. He did two tours of duty with Seton Hall, Fairleigh Dickinson, Villanova, and more. And along with Freddie is Nick Boyd, the former star at St. Mary's High School in Rutherford. He's also Fred Hill's nephew. And Nick Boyd just capped off a stellar senior season at San Diego State, where he led the Aztecs to the NCAA tournament. And just last week, Boyd announced he's transferring to play his last year of college basketball at the University of Wisconsin to play for Greg Gard and the Badgers. Fred, Nick, welcome to the podcast.
Pleasure to be here, Brian. Appreciate you having us on. And Nick's got a great, great story to tell. So I'm interested to hear his side of the story. And interested to see what he has to say to all the fans back here in New Jersey.
Yeah, Nick, this is a pleasure. First of all, you know, you've been well traveled, Nick, and I want to get to your story in a little bit and how you got here. But to think that you're going to be playing basketball next season at Wisconsin, you know, why Wisconsin?
Yeah, first and foremost, thank you for having me. You know, pleasure. This is actually probably like one of my first times speaking back home, in a sense, like, you know, begin on a podcast right there in New Jersey, where I played basketball for so long. It had a big impact on myself and the community. But Wisconsin, I don't know, it just felt like they had the right makeup to win. And I mean, You talk about dreams and aspirations of going to the NBA. I feel like the last step is for me to prove that I could win on the highest level and just compete on the highest level each and every night.
So in this era of portal transfers, you hear stories about players, committing sight unseen, not even on campus. Did you go to Wisconsin?
Yeah, I took so my uncle and I, we sat down. We didn't really talk about transferring much throughout the season. Kind of let me just focus on the season, play my game, have fun, just stay in the moment. And obviously, after the last game, we kind of had a late night talk, just like the game plan and what he thinks. And obviously, it was on me to make the decision. And after that game against Carolina, I just decided the next couple of days I'm gonna have to man up, go into the office, speak to my coaches, let them know what I thought. And then right from there, obviously, my coach, I mean, my uncle been in the business for a long time. So he's probably been getting tons of calls throughout the season. And he's just, shutting it down. But he kind of had an idea of what he wanted me to look at and, do my homework on. I did my homework and we came up with three schools that we liked and, took visits there. So, yeah, I made it to Wisconsin.
Before I get to the three schools, was there consideration to stay at San Diego State, or you just said, you know what, it's time to move on, and why?
Yeah, I mean, of course, I always considered San Diego State in a sense, but at the same time, I just feel like my last year, I just wanted a new challenge. So that's what was important to me, and that's kind of what we spoke about. And obviously, playing in the Mountain West, one of the top leagues in the country, but the Big Ten is just something a little bit different. And obviously, talent might be a little bit better, but that's what I wanted to have for my last year and focus on trying to compete
There's some
against.
big farm boys in the Big Ten, some big boys overall. Are you ready for the physicality of that league?
I mean, yeah, hopefully growing up in Jersey prepares me to compete and be gritty every night. So I think I'll be all right. But like anything, adjusting to the game, adjusting to the speed, the physicality, like you said, I obviously played against in some big time games, but it's different when you see it every single night. So it's just something you got to prepare for mentally more than physically.
Yeah, and the travel, right? This is basically Wisconsin to the West Coast,
Yeah, that's crazy.
UCLA and USC to the East Coast back here against, Rutgers and Maryland.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Mountain West, like, travel was tough. Like, although the schools are kind of close in time and distance, just getting to some of the places we had to get to, like Wyoming or going to Boise State in Idaho, was it wasn't the easiest travels. I think we played one game against Cal and we got there the day of the game because there was fog in the San Diego airport. So, travel, was tough, but as long as you get a routine, and I mean, obviously, I'm gonna love to come home and play in front of my family, so I'm just excited.
Yeah. What were the three schools? Wisconsin, who are the other two?
So I took a visit first at Wisconsin, then we decided on UNC, and then lastly, wrapped it up with Washington.
Three pretty darn good schools right there.
Not bad options for sure.
And a kid from Jersey, kid, you're from New York and play basketball here in New Jersey. Wisconsin is a
Yeah.
different area. It's farms out there. What did you think of the campus?
Yeah, I mean, what kind of shocked me, like you said, Wisconsin. I kind of had a feeling that's somewhere I would really take, my last year and take it serious. So I kind of had a feeling like, man, this might be somewhere I can go. And then when I got there, like you said, you think farms and all these horses and cows, but when I got there, it was downtown. So I was like, what the heck? Like, this is a real city. It's beautiful. And just to see the buildings, and obviously they say it's one of the best college towns. I went during spring break, so I wasn't able to see the full extent of that, but I mean, this decision was bigger than location and stuff like that. It was more just about basketball and finishing up and getting a chance to play at the highest level.
Right. Okay. And we're going to get back to you in a second, Nick. Fred, I want to bring you in here because, you were his aide, and not only his uncle, his advice, his consigliere, but you handled all of these negotiations like an agent would.
Yeah, I've spoke to all the schools and kind of got a feel for who was really interested in Nick. And obviously I know a lot of coaches and a lot of styles of play, and what I would do is kind of go through things. And we knew what we really wanted for Nick, and his goal and dream is to play in the NBA. And we felt that if he played in a Power Four league, that was the next step in his progression. He's had a phenomenal career. And I really like the Big Ten. Having coached at Northwestern and in the Big Ten, I thought it would be a great challenge for him. The physicality of the league, night in and night out, going against big guards. That's what he's going to face in the NBA. So we kind of felt that that was where we were headed, and he did his homework. So I would just say these schools are interested. Do your homework, see who's coming back, see who they're going after in the portal, and let's make a good basketball decision for you to achieve your goals and dreams. And so I directed him, but he did all the homework, and he made the decision that he felt in his gut and his heart was best for him.
So, Nick, I have to ask you, agents usually get a cut of the contract. Did you have to pay this guy?
I might have, we're gonna have to do figure something out. I mean, he's helped me along the way so much from day one. So, I mean, this the least I could try to, repay. And obviously, we'll figure something out. Whether it's not about money with us, man. We just wanted to make a good decision. And however I can take care of him, whether that's tickets to the game or him getting the chance to see me go kill Rutgers, bleep that out. But yeah, that's somehow.
And there's no fee on my end, and I'm really happy that I'm in that situation because agents do, quite honestly, I'm not a big fan of going in and college kids trying to make a decision and they're taking 20% of, what these kids are getting in their name, image, and likeness. And, a lot of people don't understand that there's taxes on top of that, there's this and that, and then all of a sudden, an agent comes in and takes a sizable chunk of that. And, I'm really happy. Nick's too humble to say, but he's the type of kid that will give money to charities. He's the type of kid that'll do things for maybe inner city kids at risk, whether it's camps, those types of things. And those are the types of things that we'll talk about that he can kind of pay it forward a little bit from being in a really, really special situation this year in being able to transfer and do okay with name, image, and likeness and have an opportunity to play in the Big Ten and go to Wisconsin.
Yeah, Nick, I'm sure that in the spirit of name, image, and likeness, it knowing you just now, the way we start talking here, I can see you doing things like that. I get that vibe from you.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's, like you said, that's important to me. And just to even piggyback off what he was saying in terms of agents, I mean, I'm just fortunate enough to have somebody because a lot of kids try to go the route I went, where they either use their father, their cousin, their uncle, or the best friend or something like that. And sometimes those situations get sticky, or they get even led to a situation where it's not the best for them in terms of basketball. So obviously, just having him by my side, someone I could kind of just. I'm looking at basketball and I could relax, sit back and relax while he's looking at the logistics of things of how could this play out and what can we do to make sure it's just the best fit for myself off the court, So, and you can't, I can't really take a step back if I don't really trust who he is. And obviously having him in my life for so long is a blessing. And a lot of people are unfortunate to have that opportunity. So that's not something I really take for granted. And it's like one of my favorite things when the coaches call and I'm like, yeah, just call my uncle. Like, who do I call? Nowadays, all these coaches are like, man, who's your agent? Who you? Yeah, just call my uncle. I don't really have an agent. Just call my uncle. And sometimes they kind of, they don't really know what they're getting themselves into. But then they realize it's somebody who has some knowledge about the game of basketball. It kind of makes them
Yes.
stop the BS and focus up. So that's one of my favorite things.
Yeah, someone who's been around the college game for, I don't know, Fred, I'm losing track now, 40 plus years.
37 years in college and another six, kind of. Doing my gap year program
Yeah.
and our little trip overseas. And so, staying involved. But I had a great, great run throughout my college career, and I coached in college for 37 years.
Yeah, and I want to talk to you about that trip coming up. I know Nikki's going to be a part of that too. So listen, without getting into logistics and figures, but take me into a negotiation. Is there, you hear about things where there's a bidding war and things like that? Were there colleges that you went back and forth when you got to a Final Three?
No, not really. And I think that's what Nikki was alluding to, the fact that I was a former head coach in the Big East. And it was kind of funny. It's funny to him and it's funny to me because he would say, call my Uncle Freddie. But he never said who Uncle Freddie was. And then guys would call me and guys that I've known for years and years, head coaches, and they're like, you're Nikki's uncle? He said, call his uncle. And like some guys would punch in the number he gave them and my name would come up in the phone.
Because it's
And
already in their
because it's already in
contacts.
there in the contacts. And so it was a little bit of a shock. We had a lot of fun with it. But no, when guys called me, it was really simple. Like I didn't need to be recruited. Just listen, are you interested in Nick? Is it a good fit? And everybody, we heard from literally 40 schools. And everybody in that realm, they're all in the same, I like to call it, they play in the same sandbox.
Sure.
So the NIL money and all of that stuff, that was always going to take care of itself. We didn't have to do any negotiating whatsoever. I was looking at great opportunities for Nick. What I thought, Nick, do your homework and then you're going to pick the school. But we didn't have to go back and forth with anybody. We didn't have to do anything because they were all in the same ballpark. And this was never about, like some guys do, and that's what Nick was referring to, get bad advice, becomes a bad basketball situation, because they're just looking at the highest bidder. And that was never, ever a consideration for us. And we were just very fortunate that every school in the country that needed a point guard called me and talked to me about Nick. And then we went through the process and the homework, and we narrowed it down, and we thought were three great choices. And then it was his job to go visit, and his job to pick this place that he felt he could thrive in and succeed in, and help him get to the NBA and help that team potentially get to the NCAA tournament, Final Four. And the ultimate goal of every program and every kid is to win a national championship. And Nick's experience what it's like to get to a Final Four, and he hopes to get that experience again at Wisconsin.
Nick, I'll tell you what, your path is, it's not, it's almost like the path less traveled, right? We hear about the path less traveled, and it's not like you were this, four-star blue chip recruit that went right to the Big Ten, right? You started out at Don Bosco Prep in high school, then you go to St. Mary's, and you're one of the best players in St. Mary's history, and you go to prep school for a year to get bigger, stronger, faster, whatever it was. 3 years at Florida Atlantic, 4 years if you include your redshirt year, then to San Diego State, now to Wisconsin. I know I just summed it up in bullet points, but how about this journey that you've taken?
I mean, crazy. It seems like so long ago, but like you said, I remember we had these same talks since I was in eighth grade when I decided to go to Don Bosco. So, it's kind of full circle, and yeah, it's crazy. I mean, a young kid, obviously, I love the game. I've been around my uncle. He was the head coach, and assistant coach XYZ, so many places, and just being in that environment, going to practices, basketball was what I wanted to do. So, we had talks, and I always told him, like, man, I want to reclass. I want to reclass. I don't know if he remembers this, but just going to Seton Hall summer camp, telling him, like, I need to reclass. He said, always go to prep school. I think you should go to prep school. Go to prep school. So I'm like, all right, whatever. All my friends were reclassing, and you get that peer pressure. And then I decided to go to Don Bosco Prep. Was at that time wasn't the biggest basketball school, but it was getting there. And I went there, and obviously my freshman year didn't really play much. On freshman and JV, didn't play a lot either, just because I was short. I was about 5'5", 5'6", probably his height at that time. So
Oh, a little dig there,
it's all
Freddie.
right. It's all right. He might be able to beat me one-on-one, but I'll take him at the free throw line and steal.
So then my sophomore year, I actually started to grow a little bit. Got to like 5'10", but usually, when you go to a junior year, you want to play varsity. And those are the same conversations we had now with coaches. Was, coach, do you think I'll be able to play on varsity? Do you think I'm a starting point guard? Do you believe in my abilities to be that starting point guard, be that guy for you? And I did what I wanted with those answers. And he said, if you want to go play, I think St. Mary's is a good place for you. It's a smaller school. And I was just like, took a visit there, and coming from Don Bosco to there, it was like, I don't know, 1,000 people in Don Bosco to maybe 100 at St. Mary's. And just he's like, you know what, I want to go hoop. And coach let me rock out my junior year, and then I ended up breaking my leg. So I had sat out my whole junior year. So I was kind of like panicked about that. Like, dang, like this is my, I just started playing varsity, averaging like 13 points. This is my time. Maybe I can get some college coaches to catch their eye on me and stuff like that. But came back my senior year after taking the whole summer off, and then just my team wasn't as good, but I was going for 30 every night. And then obviously, some schools in the area took a look at me, Caldwell, Pace, D2, stuff like that, East Stroudsburg. But
Right, because you were late. You were
yeah,
late to the
I was
game.
late bloomer. So but ultimately they didn't really offer me a full a scholarship, to be quite honest, to be blunt about it. So I was like, you know what, I'm gonna go prep school like we always talked about. Went to go work out at Blair Academy. Told me I was pretty much told me I wasn't good enough to be on the team or play a little bit. So he's like, my uncle's like, I know this prep school in Indiana, kind of the same story I'm in now. And he took me out there, and I'm like, got out there, we're driving around. I'm like, dang, like what the heck am I? Where am I at? At this point, I've never been outside of New Jersey area. So I'm like, yo, where am I at right now? So went out there, I'm seeing cornfields, and I get an opportunity to work out in front of the coaches, and I'm a little nervous. I think this was like a week trip. So I haven't played basketball 3 days prior. I was just running around. This is my first time going on airplanes, hopping off airplanes. So got up and down on the court. And then after that, coach is like, yeah, I like you, and I think you could be a D1 point guard. And right then and there, I said in my head, yeah, I'm coming here. I don't care where we're at. So
Right, right.
said
It's all
that.
about basketball, right? You
Yeah,
can
made
look
the
past these
decision.
things.
I was right there and there. So I made a decision, and then ultimately just kept working, and then with the help of my uncle and Coach Dave, they allowed me to get some Division I offers, and then I landed at FAU.
Yeah, and what were the other offers at the time? Were do
Yeah,
you
so my
have any
first
others?
offer was Sacred Heart University in Connecticut, which I was pretty excited about. I like that staff actually a lot.
My good friend Anthony Latina.
Yeah, he's a good, great dude.
Yeah,
I mean, he
yeah.
recruited me hard, and yeah, it was fun. So that was like my first offer. Then I had like Tulsa, and then just a couple of like, I don't even know. It was a bunch of mid majors, JMU maybe,
Okay.
Marist, FAU. But then ultimately, when I got on the phone with Coach, just like this, because it was COVID had shut everything down. I got on the phone with Coach like this on the Zoom and FaceTime, and I just felt like Coach May, Dusty May, was just, the most down to earth coach there was. So decided to go to Florida, and obviously Boca Raton is not a bad place, so I was all for it.
And then the next thing you know, you're taking Florida Atlantic to the Final Four and
Yeah, that's
playing at
crazy.
Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, so I mean, went to FAU my first year. Was COVID. We only played about 19 games, but I think I the first couple games I didn't play at all. Then I'm like, you know what? I just started working my butt off. I don't know what I was working on. Just in the gym all the time, and I started getting better, obviously with experience. And then I think I averaged like 15, 16 minutes my freshman year, about 5 points. Came back the next year, like I'm gonna be the starting point guard on this team. Was busting my tail and probably drove myself into a wall doing so, and broke my foot. So I, another bump in the road where I had to call
Yeah.
this guy, like, yo, I broke my foot. I don't know what to do. Like, do I sit out? Do I stay? What do I do? Like, do I redshirt? So I'm going back and forth with that, and he's telling me, I think you should redshirt. I think you should redshirt. So I'm like, man, do I redshirt? I don't want to be 27 years old in college when it's all said and done. Like, what do I do? So I'm going back and forth, and ultimately decided to redshirt that year, and they gave me this year that I have now. So my sophomore year redshirted, shut it down, and then came back the next year, and with the group of guys that I came in with, we all stepped into bigger roles and stuff like that, and made it to the Final Four. So it was crazy.
That it is crazy. And then obviously, Southern California, San
Yeah,
Diego State this year.
so that came it we ran it back. We decided to run it back after the Final Four. Obviously, like everyone knows, it's hard to do. Different things come in the way, distract you, and take your mind off, the main thing, which is winning. So decided to go into the portal after Coach May left for Michigan, and I just wanted to, like I said, it was another conversation like, hey Nick, I wanted to stay at FAU. It was like, hey Nick, man, I think you gotta leave FAU if you wanna be a pro. And I'm just like, dang, like FAU, I'm not trying to leave Boca. Like, this is my home. Done special things here, made great friends. That's somewhere I wouldn't want to retire when I'm done. Like, I don't know if I could leave this place. Like, I'm leaving my friends, all my teammates and stuff like that. And then he's like, once he said, like, I think you're too comfortable in Boca. You got to get out of there. That was it. I said, I'm going to the portal right then and there. I was like, that's all he had to say for me to just change my mind and like, you know what? This is what I got to do. And it was the best decision for me. And then went into the portal that year, and obviously had some high majors and different things like that, but I wanted to go to a program where it was less about glitz and glamour, just grittiness. I had to get my chip, my swag back. So decided to come to San Diego State, obviously, with their history and their program, obviously going to the national championship game, and then Sweet 16 the year after. So I wanted to go somewhere I could win, and then obviously San Diego was nice, so that was a cherry on top, and now
I'll
I'm
tell you
here.
what, Nick, it's a fascinating story. Fred, when you look at him as okay, so I know it's hard not to look at your nephew as being your nephew, but when you see the basketball life that he's traveled, what does that make you think of?
Well, I'm extremely, extremely proud of him. Number one, he's the ultimate competitor. He's the ultimate leader. He's a winner. He's a hard worker. His path not only wasn't easy because of people misevaluating him or talent or developing late, but he suffered an injury in high school. He suffered an injury in college. But I think, and one thing I learned through my career is, what makes you is the tough times and the hurdles that you overcome. And I think those things helped him develop into the person he is today, to have the opportunities he has today. And, when people say, is he an NBA player? All I say is, I would not put anything past him. He's put himself in that position. He's got things to work on. I think that's what this year is going to be all about. But he's accomplished so much already. And he's made great decisions. I try to guide him, but the only time I've ever told him what to do was the year to redshirt, because he wanted to go back and he wanted to play in the last nine games. And I said, no. I said, you don't understand. This
Right.
extra year on the back end, it's so meaningful. I can't explain it to you, but you're not going to go back and play 5 minutes a game for nine games as the security blanket for Florida Atlantic. And other than that, we guide him, but he's made great, great decisions. I'll be honest with you, he knows it. I wanted him to go to Sacred Heart. I love Anthony Lutina. When I was at Seton Hall,
Quincy
Quincy
McKnight.
McKnight came from
Yes.
Sacred Heart,
Yes.
and Quincy was a starting point guard for us on a top 10 team in the country. Back then, a sit out transfer had to sit out, which I liked because it's like that extra year, and you get bigger, stronger, better, learn a system, and that's kind of what Nick did with the gap year program. It's kind of what he did when he redshirted. He's also, very, very intuitive. And when he sat out, we talked about Nick. You sit out, watch the game from a coaching perspective, learn the game. Now you can't play. You're sitting on the bench, not ready to get in as a player. Look at it as a coach, and develop your basketball IQ to a whole nother level. And that's something that he has. When people talk about, what are his attributes, all the intangibles, but he's as good a pick and roll guy as there is in the country in terms of his basketball IQ, making reads, getting the ball out of his hands on time, on target to guys. That's an NBA level skill that he has. And then when you bring all the other intangibles into it, and he has the other attributes at a very high level as a college player, he's got a real chance, and he's made great decisions. And I'm just really, really proud of the way things have turned out for him and what he's done.
Yeah, Nick, everything happens for a reason. Do you believe that?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's funny. Somebody asked me a question about my gap year, and I was just thinking about everything, how it played out. It's kind of like, it's like the same story twice right now. Like, I went to Don Bosco, went to St. Mary's. Then that extra year was like, you did something, but now it's really time to really show that you could do it. And that's when I was able to take off and go play at the highest level of college basketball. So like now it's like my first couple years at FAU, and winning championships and doing stuff like that. Went to go do it on my own here at San Diego State, and now it's like I'm back in the Midwest, just like I was in Indiana. And it's time to take
Yeah.
off. That's kind of how it's kind of funny how it's the same story kind of repeating itself and coming full circle. So I'm just excited.
Yeah, strange the way that works out that way. Dusty Mays at Michigan, was he interested?
I mean, yeah. Coach and I talk. Like, we talk all the time. That's one of my favorite coaches. Obviously, we develop something that's bigger than just basketball in terms of relationship. But I mean, like me, like I just feel like now, like me and Coach, we did everything we did already.
Okay.
Like, it's different now. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, we're kind of like, I'm like his former player. Like, I graduated already. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like a more of a love. And obviously, I would love to be coached by him again one day. Obviously, it's not possible no more. But this is more for a relationship, a friendship, a family. And I just can't wait to compete against him in the Big Ten.
Yeah, I bet. And you're gonna bring a style with that pick and roll, like Fred was saying, that's kind of new to Wisconsin.
I mean, and that's the funny thing about it, which I think is why it's perfect timing. Last year they had a couple guards. Last year they changed the offense from the traditional Wisconsin offense, where it was kind of more slower, kind of like joysticking, and you got to hit this option and go to that option, kind of like a Princeton, but not a Princeton in a sense. But just, having those type of robotic joystick movements in their offense, and now it's more of a flow. Whereas last year they introduced it to the team, and obviously they didn't have the perfect personnel for it in terms of just a point guard that can come off a bunch of ball screens, but they had great guards. I mean, Tanjay, who's an All-American, Blackwell, who I hope comes back. He's going through the
Yeah.
NBA stuff, but another great player. But this year they said this is the first year they're able to recruit to it. So I'm just excited to kind of like just play in the offense where it's free flowing, like whoever gets it goes. And I know I'll be able to take advantage of all the ball screen opportunities, especially in transition, because one thing about me, I love to rebound the ball as a guard. I mean, I think I averaged like four this year, so I just have a nose for it, and now even more. So I'm gonna be hunting that ball down.
Hey, one of the best guards ever to do it, rebounding. I saw up close and personal for years was Jason Kidd, and there was no outlet pass with Jason Kidd, right? Because he could just get the
Gravity,
ball and go.
bro. Grab it and go. That's what I like too. So.
There's something about that. I'm listening to you. You sound like a coach. You know, joystick and the offense. I don't know. Listen, play as long as you can, Nick. Play as long
That's
as you
my fault.
can
I'm not trying
at
to
the
work.
highest level,
Yes, sir.
but file that away. There could be some coaching in there too.
I hope I'm not trying to work. No 9 to 5. So
Just like your
being a
uncle.
coach would be like hooping again. So that's my.
Great. So before I let you guys go, I want to talk about your venture, Fred, and I know Nick is a part of this too, because the Team Hill Foundation is near and dear to your heart, something you started, and you're taking a team once again of players with New Jersey ties on this summer European cruise, 10 days, I believe,
Yep.
and they're going to play basketball. And Jacob Morales, where I teach at Montclair State, Jacob Morales just got first team All Met. D3, he's going to be on that team with New Jersey ties, and this guy right here, Nick, is going to be on that team as well. So how excited are you to run it back again and tell our listeners about this?
Well, it's really become a passion of mine, and I just did an interview with Jacob, and we talked about a. I can't tell you how special it is to have my nephew on the trip and have an opportunity to be with him and to coach him a little bit and to watch him play in person, live, be on the bench, something that's a thrill for me. And then we just talked to Jacob about Montclair State's my alma mater and having a player from my alma mater that they won a championship this year. I think it's the last one was in 2000, early 2000. The one before that was 1981 when I was the captain here at Montclair State and we won a championship, went to the NCAA tournament. So, to kind of like Nick said, to come full circle and have a guy come on the trip is really cool. And but the trip itself, Bri, it's hard to describe. It's a bucket list trip for anybody. We go on one of the top three cruise lines in the world. There's only 500 or 600 people on the ship. We cruise from Rome to Barcelona. When we get off at a port, we go in, we get off it, pull into, we're going to be in Sicily, Trapani, and we're going to play a game. So you get into the port about 7:30, 8 in the morning. You get up and you have breakfast on the ship. We jump on a bus. We go play a game at 11 o'clock in the morning. We're back to the ship. And then the kids have the rest of the day for cultural educational experiences. They go on excursions. They can come back on a ship and hang out and relax at night. Five big time restaurants. They eat like you're at a 5-star restaurant. The whole trip is, I have a guy on my staff, Rich DeLautry, who coached in the NBA for 22 years. And he went on the trip with us last year. And he said, this is NBA level and then. And it's just something really neat. They get to play against European club teams, pro teams. And a lot of these guys want to be European pro players. If you don't make the NBA and you can't get there, then this is a chance where there's some agents over there, there's some coaches over there, there's general managers that watch the games. And so it gives them a little bit of a leg up in terms of those people knowing who these players are and having seen them play live and in person. And could present an opportunity for guys to get a European professional contract. So there's a lot of things rolled into it. And it's really, we went to Croatia last year
Which I
and
hear, Dubrovnik. What? It's one of the most beautiful cities and ports in the world.
phenomenal. It was just a phenomenal trip. And, like the kids say today, we're going to run it back this summer and run it back for the next few summers to come. And I'd really like to develop 2 or 3 trips a summer so I can give more kids that experience because it truly is a once in a lifetime opportunity for basketball players to come and take a trip like this.
It's a lot to foot the bill though, coach. And how are you able to, pay for this, or do the players have to supplement it?
So by NCAA rule, alumni and fans are allowed to supplement the trip. So the players can go to their alumni and they have what we put together for them are GoFundMe pages. And then the alumni can contribute right to their GoFundMe page. It comes right to the Team Hill Foundation. It's a 501c3 charitable organization.
So it's a
So
tax
it's a
write-off.
tax write-off for
Yep.
them,
Okay.
and they're allowed to support their players to go take a phenomenal trip. And again, besides basketball, culturally and educationally, it's a once in a lifetime opportunity for these guys. And the higher level kids that play Division I basketball, high majors, those alumni have more resources and jump in more readily. It's a little tougher for the Division III and Division II kids, but it's been my goal to take Division III and II kids because they never even get invited to something like this. So
Right.
we do our best to supplement as much as we can. You can contribute right to the Team Hill Foundation for our trip. We figure it out. We get it done between the guys, the schools, what people do to support our foundation. We give these kids the opportunity of a lifetime.
Well, Team Hill Foundation is doing a fabulous job, like you said, with local charities and also your basketball academy. And now this, Nick, have you been on a cruise before?
Nah, this is my first. So I haven't done much traveling. Like, ever since I really started taking basketball serious, I've never really been on vacations, even if it was just to go to the Jersey Shore. I used to go to the Jersey Shore when I was younger every year, but
Sure.
I haven't really took much vacations. I took my first vacation in a long time. I went to Hawaii with some friends, and that was cool. But to do this, especially and play basketball, I'm not even sure of the places he said, but I'm just excited to experience it, and most of all, just connect with different guys. And like you said, like, guys come from all levels, D1, D2, D3, and I think that's what's most important to me too, because I know, like you said, just hearing my story, I'm an underdog too. We never really had a bunch of opportunities, so for guys who not even say aren't as fortunate as myself, but guys who still have a point to prove and get opportunity to play across the globe is crazy. And it's a lot of things that I'm sure it's a lot of things that I'm sure a bunch of these kids never thought they could do, so including myself. So I'm just excited to get out there and have some fun, and hopefully we win some games, but most of all, just enjoy the experience and meet new people, man. That's my favorite thing to do.
And you know what? That's the right attitude, and experience new cultures, and when you get off, just experience being there, right? Because you're only there for a short time. And what I think it's you mentioned it. It's like instead of you're going off and watching, you're on some excursion, or you're going to the beach, or you're going to see some ancient ruins. You're going to play basketball, but you still have time to do that stuff.
That's what's really special. And we set the trip up that way. We're on a 10-day cruise. We'll play five games. So,
Okay.
we fly into Rome a day before we board the ship. And we've got a 4-hour tour set up with a private guide to take us through a lot of the historical sites in Rome. It's a 4-hour walking tour. And we'll see a
The
lot of
Vatican or
religious
the
stuff.
Colosseum? What part?
Colosseum's in
Okay,
it.
okay.
What about them legs, though? What about them legs? You need those legs for the
Look at youngster. I'm an old man. I can do it.
He doesn't want a walking
The
tour
Duomo,
where you're.
the Trevi Fountain, some
Yes,
piazzas.
yes.
So like that's important to me, that we're just not going over there to hoop it up. But then the next day we'll play a game in Rome before we get on the ship, and then I think our first port is the Amalfi Coast, and we're not going to play a game there. So they have the whole day to experience the Amalfi Coast and go on excursions and go experience the food and the cities. And then you get back on the ship and you cruise through the night. And I think the next day we're in Trapani, which is Sicily, and we're playing. So you get off the ship at 11 o'clock in the morning and you go play a game, and you still have half a day to come back and do some of those cultural things or jump on the ship and relax. And the next day we have off, and so forth and so on across the whole 10 days. So we play five games, but there's 5 days when they're completely off and they get to take advantage of this unbelievable cruise and the experiences that present themselves to the kids.
Nick, I hope you like pasta because this is the
Nah,
freshest
I'm a
pasta. What?
big Italian guy.
The freshest pasta you will have. And when you're on the Amalfi Coast, get the lemon pasta.
Hold on, let me write it down in the notes. Hold
You will
on.
not be disappointed. And you're of age. So,
Okay.
I know, you take good care of your body, but the wine over there's less tannin. So, I shouldn't say this, but you don't get as drunk. So, a little tasting.
Uncle Freddie will take care of all the wine.
Okay. Take it all in. You're there to play basketball, but you're there to, you may never get back there, Nick.
No
Okay.
doubt.
So
No doubt.
you may, I hope you do, and I hope you play and have a long career and that it takes you to the NBA or Europe, but take advantage of this because you never know if you get back, okay?
Thank you so much. I got you. Don't worry about that.
All right, Nick, this has been a pleasure. Fred, thank you guys for coming on. Good luck. Congratulations on Wisconsin, go Badgers. And I will talk to you. I'm hoping that you play at Rutgers in Piscataway, and I'll talk to you again there, okay?
I appreciate y'all so much, man.
All right, Nick, appreciate you. Fred,
Just
take
Nick.
care.
All right,
Bye.
bye. Thanks, man.
All right, Nick Boyd and Fred Hill, I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what. He has been coached well. He is a great talent. He is one of those players who he's a late bloomer, under the radar guy. Hard work pays off. I am not going to bet against him getting to the NBA. I know Nick Boyd is a little undersized, 6'3", 175 pounds, but you know what? Don't bet against him. You know, why can't he? He's a fringe player, but why can't he, you know, get to that next level, become a two-way player, and take his chances? You know, my prediction, if you told me right now, where would my money be? Where would I put my chips? I say at some point, Nick Boyd will play in the NBA. I don't know to what level, I don't know how long, but I would say he would play, and I would bet on that. I would put my chips there and bet that he will play at some point in the NBA. I can guarantee you this, if that doesn't work out, he will make a lot of money in Europe. All right. But before he gets there, he is going to have one more year of college basketball at Wisconsin. And we're going to see how he handles the Big Ten and Wisconsin and that schedule. And you heard him. He's got the mind of a coach. He's smart. He is a leader. He has all the intangibles. You know, he's going to work his ass off. And I'll be watching a lot of Wisconsin basketball next year for sure. You can bet on that. All right, let's go quickly around the tri-state because a lot has transpired. UConn is sitting pretty. You know, they've retained a lot of players on their roster, and that's what Dan Hurley does. But the big signing that they had this week was Malachi Smith, the 6-foot guard out of Dayton, by way of the Bronx. He is a former kid who was out of St. Raymond's, so he knows Northeast basketball, and he is tough as nails. All right, I've watched Malachi Smith playing. He is rugged. He's a player at Dayton, and he's not going to wow you statistically with, you know, 22 points a game. But as I said on Twitter, if you can't beat the guy, go out and sign the guy in the portal. Because Malachi Smith and Dayton, as UConn fans remember all too well, Dayton laid a whooping on UConn in that 7th place game when UConn finished in 8th place out of 8 teams in the Maui Invitational. UConn was whooped by Dayton, and Smith had a nice game. And Hurley had a front row seat. He had 9 points, 2 assists in that win. But Hurley, I'm sure, also saw the game before when he was watching film on Dayton, and he saw Malachi Smith score a career high 22 points and dish out 9 assists when Dayton lost to 5th-ranked Iowa State at the time. And in the opening round game against North Carolina, he had 12 points. He also had 13 points and 5 assists, right? The numbers are there against Cincinnati. So he is a playmaker. He is a very good outside shooter. He's a veteran. This guy's a winner. He is a New York City kid. He is going to fit in well. Trust me, Dan Hurley made mistakes this year that he's not going to make again in the portal. And he's not going to go after a kid like Malachi Smith if he doesn't know that he's a strong fit for the program. Do I think Malachi Smith is going to start? No. Will he possibly start some games? Sure. Sure. But he is being brought in to replace Hassan Diarra. There is no doubt about it. And with the talent that UConn's bringing back, he knows his role. All right. He's going to compete and try to get starting minutes and try to get some minutes on the floor. But, you know, he is out there to replace Hassan Diarra in a role that will have him in and out of the lineup and get his minutes. And Husky fans are excited about him, as they should be. He's a player that honestly adds to what they're doing and adds to this roster. Bringing back Solo Ball for the third year, bringing back Jalen Stewart for the third year, bringing back Jaden Ross for the third year. This is a program. And yeah, UConn lost Ahmad Noel. They took some losses, but bringing back all those players and bringing back Terrace Reed, they're ready to run it back. And bringing in the recruiting class that they have, the last piece of the puzzle is Alex Caravan. And should they get him, even without him, they're a top 25 team. With him, top 10, top five. So we'll see where it all shakes out there as UConn continues in their postseason. So that's UConn. All right. Rutgers, let's talk about them a little bit. All right. Tariq Francis, who's a player that I saw a couple of times this year, he can score. And I know Rutgers fans are saying, what are we doing here? You know, we need to have Big Ten players. We have a small lineup. We don't have Big Ten guards. And you know what? They have a right to say that because right now, this roster is small. There are no big guards here. All right. There is no Mulcahy coming in. There is no Dylan Harper coming in. So you're going to have to deal with what it is. Do I think Tariq Francis can be a starter for Rutgers? Probably not. But look, he's a volume shooter. And this kid had a very nice year, 2 years, couple of years for NJIT. And Rutgers fans are quick to point out, oh, you know, he takes a lot of shots. He only shoots 37% from the field. He only shoots 32% from three. That's why he averaged 19 points a game and led the America East in scoring for a team that went 6-25. I get all that. But the kid's a winner. He has a great relationship with Brandon Knight. All right. He's known him forever. I saw this kid score 23 points against Seton Hall this year. I saw him do well against Villanova. He more than held his own. Listen, he's going to be a very nice player who will get a lot of minutes under Steve Peichel. And that's what you're seeing Peichel do. He's not, Steve Peichel reportedly has about $4 million in NIL money, which is not a lot of money, right? His other Big Ten competitors have at least double that. At least you're talking double digits in millions, right? So you can't spend it all in one place. Might they spend, you know, $1 million on one player? I would think at some point they have to bring in a dynamic scorer because a player like Tariq Francis is an unproven commodity at this level. Can he get bullied around? Maybe. All right. I know you're dealing with the size of him and Jamichael Davis. I get all that. But at the same time, you know, you're going to need somebody to replace Ace Bailey and Dylan Harper. So we'll see who Rutgers brings in. We'll see who else they can get because at some point you're going to have to pay a little bit of money and bring someone else in. You know, you're going to have to bring in front court help. I'll tell you that right now because they're going to have to get a rim protector. So where's this money going? You know, you're bringing in Lino Mark. You have Jamichael Davis. You have Tariq Francis. You're bringing back Dylan Grant. You're bringing back Bryce Dortch. So there's a lot to be done here. We said it. They need a dynamic scorer on the wing, and they need a big man. That's where your money's going to go. So we'll see where Rutgers goes from here. But do I like Tariq Francis? Yes. Do I think he will start for Rutgers? Likely not. But I think that he's going to help this team. And I think Rutgers fans are going to like him. I do. Will he average 19 points a game? Hell no. But if he can come in and average 8 to 10 points and hit some threes, which, you know, we know how much Rutgers has struggled from there, then, you know, this kid's a scorer. Hopefully he can score on this level to some extent and help Rutgers win. All right. Seton Hall, I think, you know, again, you're trying to be patient, Seton Hall fans, but so far, I like what Seton Hall has done. So far, the latest addition is somebody, you know, the big fish obviously was bringing in a player like Bud Clark because Bud Clark is going to come in and he is going to start at point guard. So if you have Bud Clark and a guy like Garway Dual, you're doing pretty well in the backcourt. I'd like to also see them bring back Jacine Felton, but does he want to enter the transfer portal as we've seen other players like Prince Eligbay and Yassine Toumi and Gus Yeldon and Scotty Middleton take the course? You know, it wouldn't surprise me either way if Jacine Felton stays or leaves, but with a player like Bud Clark, that would likely push Felton over to the two guard. And honestly, I think he's a better two guard than a point guard from what I saw this year. I think he's more comfortable coming off the ball than bringing the ball up. And why not? You know, we saw how, you know, St. John's used a 2 and 3 guard lineup, right? With the players they had this year, with Davon Smith and Sim Wilcher and Kadari Richmond and even RJ Lewis. That's basically 4 guards you have in there. Do I think that Felton and Dual and Clark could all exist in the backcourt together at Seton Hall? Sure, I do. But it's up to Felton and what he wants. So, Bud Clark, an A-level transfer for Seton Hall and what they're trying to do, because Shaheen Holloway got a point guard in his mold, got a point guard which was his number one priority this offseason, and a point guard who's a proven scorer, albeit at you know, Merrimack, but still, his game translates to the Big East. And now they added another player in TJ Simpkins from Elon. And this is a guy who's taller, 6'5". So he's kind of the replacement for Chauncey Jenkins. And at a place like Elon, he averaged 14 and a half points a game. Not a great 3-point shooter whatsoever, 26%, but is a very good free throw shooter. So we've seen Seton Hall, we've seen this theme. All right. Bud Clark, very good free throw shooter. I believe he was at like 75, 78%. And now a player like TJ Simpkins, 81%. So even though Simpkins is not a great 3-point shooter, you can become one. All right. He is a very good free throw shooter. And he did very well against, you know, teams like North Carolina, Notre Dame, schools like that. He's a New York City kid. So Seton Hall needs next to get another wing and certainly another big. So there's a lot of room for both those teams right now. I think you're going to see some movement in the next couple of weeks. But listen, these things take time, like I said. Last I want to talk about is St. John's, because this is a team that they're going hard after Xavien Lee. And the thing with Xavien Lee is it's down to two teams. It seems like it's down to Florida and St. John's. That is the latest as of this podcast. When Xavien Lee visited St. John's last weekend, I think there were a lot of fans that thought they were going to sign him. They thought that there was going to be this wave. And I can't blame them, because Rick Pitino has shown before, you know, he's not letting guys get away. But the problem is, Lee is such a dynamic player and scorer and a commodity. And he's one of the top five, you know, ranked transfers out there, one of the top three point guards in the portal. It's going to cost a lot of money. You know, if Alex Caravan costs 2 to 2.5 million, like I said, that's what you're going to have to pay for Xavien Lee, maybe more. And Florida has a little bit of an advantage in that, one, there's football money versus the vitamin water money. Two, they're a football school, so naturally their pockets are deeper. Three, they're coming off a national championship. And here's a little unknown commodity. I don't know if a little unknown nugget, but one of his high school teammates at a prep school in Pennsylvania was Thomas Houck. And Thomas Houck was a performer this year and a very good player on the wing for the Gators and a key part of their national championship run. So there is a connection there, and maybe that familiarity with these two players who play together can be a major selling point for Xavien Lee. But look, it's all going to come down to money. Okay? Xavien Lee may also visualize himself, envision himself, that's a better word, as the replacement for Walter Clayton Jr. And I'm sure he's thinking, I can do for Florida what Walter Clayton Jr. just did. But let me just say this. If those two were standing next to each other, I would take Walter Clayton Jr. 10 times out of 10. Why? I think Clayton is a smarter player. And I say that with all due respect to Lee, who is coming from Princeton. I understand that. But Clayton is just smoother. He has done it at this level for 2 years. And he's much more polished at this level. I think if you watch Xavien Lee as much as I did, as much as I have over the last 2 years, I think he had a better sophomore year. I think this year his numbers were inflated. He would take, 18, 22 shots a game. He would force too much. I think he was selfish. I think he was trying to audition himself for the NBA. And I think this year, since he tested the waters last year in the NBA draft process, I think this was his year to get him to the NBA. And that was it. In his mind, I don't think he felt he was coming back to Princeton. And now that he didn't do enough this year to impress the scouts, he felt like, all right, I got to get out of Princeton and I need to get to a big time program that will help me get to the NBA. Well, I'll just say this. Is he a great talent? Yes. Is he an incredible ball handler who can get his shot off on any level in college basketball? Yes. But I think he forced too much. And more than that, the games that I saw him play against physical front lines, especially Yale, I'm telling you, he needs to add 10 to 15 pounds of muscle. And maybe another year of growth and another year of maturity and another year of the weight room will get that. But a player I saw this year, he was timid. He was passive at times amongst the trees. There were too many times I saw him blow by his defender and get into the lane amongst trees and not be able to get his shot off against bigger guys, against bigger front lines, and would pass the ball off or get his shot blocked. And when you're doing that in the SEC and the Big Ten, or the Big East in this case with St. John's, it's a different level of big. It's a different athleticism. It's a different athletic big than they had at Yale, even. So if he couldn't do it in the Ivy League, what makes you think he's going to do it and get his shot off inside when he's trying to drive to the rim and finish in the Big East or the SEC? That's my concern. So I think whoever gets Lee will get a player who can be a dynamic scorer. But I'm telling you, you're not getting Walter Clayton Jr.'s replacement. You're not getting Kadari Richmond's replacement. You're not. Those are dudes. Those are first team all conference, borderline, first team all Americans in Walter Clayton Jr. You're not getting that. You're getting a guy who to me is thin, who is athletic and fast, but doesn't have the consistent jump shot and may be a little bit of a disappointment. That's a strong word, but he may not be the player at this level that you think you're getting. That's my scouting report on Xavien Lee. So we'll see if he ends up at St. John's or Florida. I think St. John's fans would take him in a heartbeat, but remember what I said about that. I hope I'm wrong, but I've seen enough of him, and that's my feeling on Xavien Lee. All right, that'll do it for this edition of the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. My thanks to Fred Hill and Nick Boyd. I can't wait to watch Wisconsin Badger basketball this year. Good luck to them as they head on their European tour. And if you want to donate or sponsor or go to the GoFundMe, you can find out information at Team Hill Foundation and also USAGardenStateBasketball.com. USAGardenStateBasketball.com. My thanks also to my sponsor, Mike Supa of Remax Revolution. If you're looking to buy, sell, or list a home down the Jersey Shore, we're talking Monmouth or Ocean Counties, give Mike a call at 201-988-2577 and tell him that Brian sent you from the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. All right, my thanks to you, the listeners. Keep spreading the word. Keep downloading, sharing, and listening to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. As long as there is news out there during this transfer season, there will be a podcast. My name is Brian Dean of Ellis. So long.